Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch, as you always are on Fridays, 11 in the morning, of course, Pacific Standard Time, wherever you are in the world listening. You don't want to miss today, because as always, I have a great show for you. You're going to learn a lot. I don't know if you saw some of my social media stuff and tweets about today's show, but this is the one you need to listen to fully. Or, of course, you can download and replay whenever you'd like. All my shows are available in the archives here on the LA Talk Radio webpage. Yeah, Dr. Michelle on the Couch, Channel 1. Or, of course, you can pick up the shows on iTunes Podcast for free. Yay! On the Couch with Dr. Michelle. You're going to love this, as I said. And always, I invite you to call in if you have any questions or comments for me and my special guest today. We're talking about narcissism. Yeah, that's a fascinating subject. And, of course, the phone to call in is right here in beautiful Los Angeles, 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. Also, I take your emails. If you're shy, you don't want to get your voice on the air, of course we can talk via text. Via email, whatever you'd like. StraightTalkDoc@gmail.com. StraightTalkDoc@gmail.com. So let me ask you some questions just to get a feel for what we're talking about today, guys. All right, let me ask you. Are you in or have you ever been in a relationship that's on and off? Yep, I think we all have. Sure. Have you often wondered if you should finally leave the relationship because, you know, although sometimes it seems so good and exciting and fun, and then when things go sour, it's really bad. And when it's bad, do you feel like you're having to kind of walk on eggshells to please your partner? Or do you feel inferior a lot of times, like your partner doesn't really care what you think? Or do you feel belittled, or do you have to keep quiet so your partner can express his or her opinion about everything and monopolize the conversations? Well, maybe you have a little bit of hint of what I'm talking about today. Being in a relationship with a narcissist, which my special guest calls a modern epidemic. We're going to find out why this is and what she's going to say about that. But how do you know if you're in a relationship with a narcissist, and what can you do about it? You know, there are a few hard facts about pathological narcissism that most people really don't know. And actually, most psychologists will never tell you, according to my special guest, Dr. Ramani Darvusala. And she is amazing. She has a wonderful practice here in the Los Angeles area, private practice, and she's also a professor of psychology at California State University, Los Angeles. She was named Outstanding Professor in 2012. She's been featured in many television series. You've seen her before, guys. She's been on Oxygen, Bravo, Lifetime, Movie Network, National Geographic, History Channel, Discovery, Science, and Investigation Discovery. And is featured, of course, is the radio commentator on many national networks. She's been on NBC's Today Show, CNN, HLN. She is an expert in what she does, a super psychologist, and really helps people. She's fascinated with a lot of the personality disorders that are designated now in the ICD-10, used to be in the DSM, and still are, actually. But we're going to bring her up on her microphone and welcome her in the studio here. Doctor, it's so nice to have you on the show.
Thank you, Dr. Michelle, so much. It's so good to be here and have a chance to talk narcissism on a Friday morning.
There you go. Well, listen, I loved your book. What a wonderful way to describe people who have this disorder, we can call it. And the book, by the way, excuse me for not saying that, it's called Shall I Stay? Should I Stay or Should I Go? And I know in your head you're singing the song, right? Surviving a Relationship with a Narcissist. And it's been a really good journey because it has taught me a lot. Mm-hmm. I was also fascinated mm-hmm. with the disorders mm-hmm. In the abnormal psychology courses. Yeah. Of course, we're fascinated with that. So let's talk about what's going on with this and why it happens and you know, all of the things that you... I wish we could talk about everything. I always write too many questions, but, you know, it's just fascinating to me. So... Let's just jump into it, and can I ask you personally why you were interested in this particular subject?
What I was seeing was people being undone by these relationships, that they were going in with good faith, and over in my practice, the same issue was coming up. It's as though he hasn't listened to me for 20 years. It's always her way or the highway. I might as well not exist. I almost feel like I'm just another tool or object in the house that's there for his or her convenience. It seemed to be such an issue. I think it's a bigger issue sometimes in a city like LA that can at times struggle with issues like superficiality.
I agree.
It really does. But also in my own research, I found that there were certain patterns of traits that actually led, again, to more issues for the people around them. I actually think narcissists are bad for our health. Their health is just fine.
Right.
They would take good care of themselves, but everyone else around them was suffering.
Yes.
So all that combination of everything and the sense that my clients didn't have a place to go to get all the information they needed, I thought, not everyone can come get therapy with me, so let me put this all in one manual so people can read this and understand how this works so they can make the best decision for them. Should they stay? Should they go?
Right. It's a great manual. It's a book. And you guys will tell you how to get a hold of it coming up in just a little bit, and also how to find out more about Dr.
Dr. Ramani is fine.
Okay, good.
Perfect.
It's like Dr. Michelle, Dr. Ramani.
There you go.
There you go. That works well. So let's just jump in there and define the characteristics of a narcissistic. I think we all have different ideas about that.
I think one of the big misconceptions is that the narcissist is just sort of in love with themselves, which on the surface they are. But the real clinical key issues in a person who's narcissistic is they completely lack empathy for other people. They're incredibly entitled. And they're very what we call grandiose. They always talk in big, highfalutin terms and about this big, grand, wonderful life they have or they're going to have. They tend to be jealous of other people. They envy what other people have. And if they already have it, they talk about themselves as if, you know, it begins and it ends with them. The sun rises and sets on them. And so, as you can imagine, they tend to suck all of the oxygen out of the room.
Yes, they do.
But they're also very charming.
Right.
That's what's so tricky about them.
Right.
They're so charming. They're often very intelligent, very well put together. That's what draws our attention in the first place. And many times before it's too late, you get in, and those other traits are shown, and it's not so pretty.
Boy, is that true? I mean, and I know you've heard in your practice so many times, people coming into you saying, "Why didn't I see?" They beat themselves up. What was it that I? Why was I so blind? I hung in there for so long with this person, and then I realized, wow! And all my friends were saying, "Run! Get out of that relationship!"
Absolutely. You know? Love is blind.
Right.
And the problem is that not only is love blind, we tend to throw bad money after good. So what ends up happening is a person, love is blind, they get in, they get excited, and narcissists play a great front game.
They
are so charming. They take people on the best dates. And what I've seen so many people do, 2, 3, 5, 10 years in this relationship, they live in the first 2 months. But in those first 2 months, it was so wonderful. I said, it was fake. It was like a day in a theme park. You know, that's what it was.
Right.
So stop. You're better off not living in those first, you know, 2 months of fantasy and focusing on the last 3 years of desolation because that's the honest truth of a relationship with a narcissist.
Wow, that is so heavy. Guys, if you would like to call in, please do so. Yeah, can call here at Los Angeles, 323-203-0815 if you have any questions about your relationships or issues you're dealing with a possible narcissist, or if you feel you may have some narcissistic tendencies, which, by the way, most narcissists don't think they do. there's nothing wrong with me. It's everyone else's fault.
That's exactly right. So
you can do that. Or you can email me here straight on the station, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, if you're shy and you don't want to get your voice on the air. We're happy to help you out. We're talking about the book, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Surviving a Relationship with a Narcissist. It's a fabulous read. It gives you a lot of clinical information, but it flows and is written really well and will help you understand what's going on. You know, when you think sometimes you're in a relationship with a narcissist, what am I doing wrong? It's my fault. What, I can't please this person enough. Well, we're going to talk about why you jumped into that relationship maybe in the first place and what about it. We gave you a little taste, but what about it was so alluring to you with Dr. Ramani. Okay, so let's move on. And yeah, you know, I was just thinking about so many things, questions we can ask ourselves or how we can define if we're in a relationship with a narcissist. You really cover that well in your book. So what are some of those questions we should say, maybe what should I ask myself if I think I might be in a relationship with someone who's narcissistic?
Number one, are they listening? Because when a person doesn't have empathy, they don't care what you're saying. So they'll have no problem yammering on about their stuff for a long time. But when you start talking about yours, they either steer the conversation back to them or they start yawning and checking their phone.
Aha. Right.
Number two, watch their fuse and watch their temper.
Okay.
While you might be surprised somebody would show this early in a relationship, they may not show it with you, but they may show it in other situations. A waiter at a restaurant, having to wait for a parking spot. I always say one of the best tells on a narcissist is watch how they drive. Do they drive angry, tailgate people, them off, curse at people? Because if they're getting that angry on the freeway, they're going to get that angry with you. It's just a matter of time. Do they always expect special treatment? So in other words, a great other tell on a narcissist, if this other stuff is present, are they chronically late or disrespectful of your time?
Oh, yes.
So it's one thing if you're running late and you call your friend and say, I am so sorry, I'm running late,
yes,
20 minutes on the freeway. But if they're chronically late and acting as if your time doesn't matter because their life is so important, I have a very important job, I can't, you know, whatever it may be, that's a sense of entitlement that will often show itself early in a relationship. Those kinds of things do appear. And a lot of times people will say some of that stuff was happening early on and I was so caught up in the rest of it. Narcissists also have pretty shady boundaries. They tend to keep a lot of exes all piled up in the side. There's sometimes they're the late night texters. They're the ones who say, we're just friends. And because they constantly need admiration and validation, they're the ones who need to have all the Facebook fans and they need to have the people admiring their handsome pictures or their pretty pictures. I mean, it's never enough for them.
Right.
And so it feels like everything in their lives is either putting on a show. Like I said, in the early months or weeks of a relationship, it's very seductive.
Yes.
Everyone wants people to go big or go home when it comes to dating relationships. I actually think a nice way to start a dating relationship is go small, because then you actually can see what the person's about and not get caught in all the sizzle, and instead you can focus on the steak.
Oh, that's great. And they, you know, they can read your book, Should I Stay or Should I Go? And then they could look for those red flags that you talk about that we're going to be talking about as well. Because it's really true. I'm with you on that. Because we do. We have to tread lightly. We have to just kind of check it out and see what we're dealing with first, because that's the way, well, with any kind of relationship, we want to know. But, you know, we'll talk about those red flags as well, which I think is so important to get into. So let's break down some of those traits and the red flags we're talking about. You list several.
30.
Girl.
30.
That are, you know, really are glaring. And in the, the ICD-10, you don't have to meet all the criteria.
Yeah.
But if you meet a certain percentage of the criteria designated, you kind of have that issue.
I say on my list of 30, which is, I go beyond the DSM-5 and the ICD-10 definitions.
I
really draw in from a wider literature, because people have been writing about narcissism since Freud. One of his early books is called On Narcissism.
Yeah.
I've been writing about this, thinking about this for a long time.
Yes.
So I went deep, and I thought, a lot of these things we don't even think about. Some of them are more subtle. Like, for example, narcissists get pleasure out of watching other people fail.
Oh,
that's not something that's listed in the DSM, but it's something that you see. It's like that envy piece. So
yes.
I got into some of the traits of narcissism are the big ticket traits, and some of the stuff's more subtle. For example, a lot of narcissists can be unfaithful in a relationship.
Yes.
Not all are,
right.
But many are, because
right,
they
right.
feel entitled
right.
to doing what they want when they want. And because they have no empathy, they don't stop and think about the ramifications of their actions.
Oh, wow. And also, you know, the grandiosity that you talked
yep.
about.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are some of the other traits that we're talking about?
Well, the big one is the lack of empathy, because that's what brings a relationship
yeah.
to its
yeah.
knees.
Yeah, yeah.
Your relationship is the one place you
right,
should
right.
have that mirror, that
right.
person who's there for you, who can look at read the emotion on your face
yeah.
and respond to it.
Right.
And if the person you're calling your partner, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it is, can't do that,
yeah.
you're starting from nowhere. There is no relationship
right.
unless there is empathy.
Wow.
And since the narcissist is not capable of empathy, there is no relationship.
Yes.
And I think and what happens is some people will say, but no, sometimes they get it. One pattern we note with narcissists is they can show empathy if the situation is completely personally relevant to them.
Okay.
So if they're going through a business problem
right.
and someone talks about a business problem,
right.
they'll sit down like the best listener on the planet because
right.
it benefits them.
Aha.
Uh-huh. That can be misinterpreted as empathy.
Fascinating stuff. That really is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, also, I often get the question from folks, as probably you do too, in our office settings, what's the difference between someone who has antisocial personality
mm-hmm.
disorder,
mm-hmm.
which maybe you can just tell people
mm-hmm.
that description,
mm-hmm.
and someone who is a narcissist?
Yeah, that's a great question, Michelle. It's something Dr. Michelle, I teach this all the time,
sure,
too,
sure.
is that antisocial personality disorder is what a lot of us in common language call psychopathy, or being a psychopath.
Right.
A person with antisocial personality disorder has all the issues like lack of empathy, but they also lie.
Ugh.
They'll use aliases. They often have really unsteady work histories. They've often ran afoul of the law. But the biggest and the most important thing that differentiates the antisocial
yes.
personality and the narcissist is that when the antisocial personality does something bad, they feel no remorse.
Right.
No remorse. That makes them dangerous, too.
Right.
They'll
it
commit
does.
Crimes, and we
right.
actually, they only care when they're caught. Narcissists actually have some capacity for knowing they did the wrong thing. They'll
do
still
they?
Do it.
They'll
right. still do it because
right.
they still want what they want. But they'll sort of say, oh, that wasn't a really nice thing to do, was it?
Right.
You know, but because they're spoiled children,
okay.
they'll do it. But
okay.
there will still be some capacity for learning. The person with antisocial personality, we really don't see that capacity for learning from their mistakes. But there's a tremendous, tremendous amount of overlap. And a lot of people, I tend to agree with this, it's a continuum.
Right.
Where narcissism's on one side and it kind of goes into full-blown psychopathy or antisocial personality.
You're a good teacher.
Well,
I want to be
you.
In your class.
I hope my students are
You're a great teacher. Guys, if you just tuned in, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, my special guest, Dr. Ramani Durvasula.
Mm-hmm.
And she's written a book. It's called Should I Stay or Should I Go? It is an excellent book, and it's about narcissism, surviving a relationship with a narcissist, as a matter of fact. And it's pertinent because look at our society today. You said something in your book that blew me away, and it's that it's rampant. It is
okay.
like, you know, it is cool to be narcissistic almost.
Mm-hmm.
It is an epidemic
mm-hmm.
in the world. And can you elaborate mm-hmm. on that a little bit more?
I love that you put it that way, Dr. Michelle, that it's cool
so.
To be
yeah.
a narcissist.
Yeah.
You know, it never is. But in
yeah.
our world, I hate to say it, but in some ways it's a recipe for success. Getting ahead at the expense of others, putting yourself first all the time, caring more about how you look than what you're made of inside, always on the quest for something more and more and more. I mean, we value that. Look at our current market of reality TV. Look at the kinds of celebrities we revere. Look at this week alone in the news.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
it's
oh, yeah.
every single day we
yes.
celebrate narcissists. We
yes.
give them the front page.
Yes, we do.
And so I think that we incentivize it. And I think social media skyrocketed it. Because what is social media designed to do? One thing and one thing only, which is to get people admiration and validation.
That's
so
right.
People are keep living, honestly, these inauthentic lives where they want to look better than they are and be someone different than they are. Mm-hmm. And so it's pulling people out of themselves and constantly, almost like they're hungry for people to like their pictures and cheerlead them on. And I think all of that has culminated in a very narcissistic world. Add to that, finally, that these days everyone is so distracted. We're on our phones. We're doing 10 things at once. Parents aren't paying attention to children.
That's right.
Children aren't paying attention to teachers.
Right.
Friends aren't paying attention to friends. When's the last time, listeners, that you sat down with a friend, turned your phones off, and looked at each other face to face and spent 1 or 2 hours uninterrupted just listening to each other?
Right.
I mean, it's the way of
what
our
a concept.
Society now. Exactly. Exactly. So I do think that... It is. It's the way. It's the dark side of technology. Technology has done so many wonderful things in our world and made the world a smaller place, but it's come at a cost. And I think that this current crop of ever-growing narcissism is a big part of that. I mean, we have a big presidential race going on, and a lot of the behavior by, I think, both candidates, frankly, I'm not even going to make this partisan, is quite narcissistic. And
yes,
so,
Does it? It is sort of always like that in a way, but it just seems this time it's
worse
just so profound.
It's worse than ever. And we accept it. I think what's happened is it's like boiling a frog. We've gotten adjusted to the water and the temperature of the water in the pot. Like,
exactly.
I think we're used to this. And I feel like there's sometimes parties I go to where nobody's talking to each other, and there's basically 20 separate, no one's having a conversation.
Yes,
everyone's
yes.
just sort of yammering on, and nobody's listening.
Right.
In a world where everyone's putting information out, I'm very curious about who's actually taking the information in.
Boy, that's really well said. And I see that as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I know we have a lot of... Why is it? Well, it's because the technology is really more accessible and has been easier for the younger generation, of course. Mm-hmm. So, and by the way, we have an email from Derek.
Okay,
and
Derek.
And he has a question for you. He says, "Hey, Doc, this is an amazing show.
Thanks.
I have a question for you about my girlfriend."
Okay, bring it, Derek.
"She is always on Instagram taking sexy pictures of herself and asking for responses. She's been doing this for a year. I always tell her it kind of hurts my feelings. Is she a narcissist?"
You know, again, obviously, Derek, we can't diagnose anyone we haven't met. But the pattern of behavior of chronically seeking validation for your appearance... That it's, A, not enough to know you yourself are beautiful, because all human beings are. And number two, that with especially when it comes to our sexualized appearance, that within the context of a committed relationship, that connection and that sense of you and your partner are sexually attracted, do you really need an audience weighing in?
Yes.
Now, unless his girlfriend, this is her profession. So, for example, she models or she tries to make money on, you know, whatever imagery she puts online. It does make me wonder, what is she questing for? And it makes me concerned for Derek that he'll always feel like he's never enough.
Oh, right.
And that's a terrible place for any human being to be in. And he's clearly
he's
tried to communicate about it and said, "I feel hurt."
Yes.
Which is, I think, a very brave and very honest communication.
Yes.
So like I said, while we may not be able to diagnose her, I have to say that it's a real canary in the coal mine. If she's spending the last year has been spent putting images on Instagram waiting for likes, and I'd wonder why. What's the need and what emptiness is being filled by that? So I think this may require some more hard conversations. This couple may even want to consider therapy or some kind of guidance.
Yes.
And then before you get in too deep and get settled in with marriage and kids, and let me put it this way, there's no time to be posting pictures online when you're actually trying to build a life together and raise children together. So I think for Derek's mental health, I hope he addresses it and then makes some hard decisions. And I hope he reads the book, because I think he'll find a lot of guidance in it.
Which reminds
me. Good luck to you, Derek.
Yeah, Derek, thank you so much for emailing us. By the way, if you guys have a question, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, let me know, because we've got a great show going on today. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We have a lot of people on the line here, and I can see, you know, what's going on the graph. So I do have a lot more emails coming in. There's some shy people out there. Don't want to get your voice on the air at 323-203-0815. That's fine. You can email me, as many folks are doing right now, and have those questions. This just seems like this is on fire, this question and this subject. You know, it's always a fascinating subject, because sometimes we don't want to overdiagnose or assume someone. It's so easy to say, she's such a narcissist or he's such a narcissist. you know. So, by the way, in case you guys just tuned in, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle here, as you always are, on LA Talk Radio, 11 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time. And we're talking with Dr. Ramani Durvasula. She's written the book, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Surviving a Relationship with a Narcissist. It's an amazing book. And the cool thing is that the doctor's been featured on so many television shows, radio shows. More so, she's a licensed clinical psychologist in private practice, has an amazing practice right here in Santa Monica, and professor of psychology at Cal State University, Los Angeles. She has been named Outstanding Professor of 2012, and I can see why. The book's great, too. Thank you. It really helps folks out and answers any questions about narcissism. Something that has always fascinated me is, you know, we talk about the narcissist needing, you know, a lot of input and being on out there in the media and always needing friends, texting late and needing that constant feedback. What is that about the narcissist not being able to be alone?
It's a great question. And the best analogy I can think of is when you're hungry, you hate being in a house without food.
Okay.
They can't feed themselves.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow.
So they're always empty. And so they always need. They can't do what the rest of us can do. If you love yourself, yes, you're always more than enough. All of us are always full.
Yes.
But the narcissist, it's almost the echo of the silence of their emptiness is more than they can bear.
Right.
So like Derek's girlfriend, they're putting pictures on Instagram. They're always reaching out. They always have to have parties. They always have to be at parties. They always have to be with people. And for them to just have a peaceful night at home is almost like a failure.
Yes.
They're uncomfortable with themselves. And I think that speaks volumes because
yes,
they're actually not very good company.
Right.
So why would they want to be with themselves?
That's exactly
so,
right.
So, you know, when you're devoid of empathy for anyone else, you're not very good company. And they
right,
can't, it's intolerable
right,
for them to manage the feeling of being alone. They almost feel as though there's something wrong with them. They're
right,
like the
right,
kings of what we call FOMO, fear of missing out.
Right.
They have to
that's
be
right,
everywhere. They have to document it all. Here I am at this, here I am at that.
Yeah.
And you wonder why they can never quiet their mind. I think it's because they're uncomfortable with their own minds.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. Well said, my dear. Great stuff. You know, one of the most common questions I get from couples or individuals is, I really want my partner to go into therapy, and I know he's a narcissist. I really keep encouraging him, and there's always an excuse. Do narcissists benefit from therapy?
Okay, so Dr. Michelle, you just asked $1 million question. it's an interesting one, even a controversial one in the field. I think in the macro, everybody can benefit in some small or large way from therapy. I think narcissists likely benefit less than most others because, A, they don't think they need to change. The thing that gets them into therapy is someone forcing them. If you don't go into therapy, I'm leaving you.
Right.
You know, or I notice that everyone's angry at me after this year's holidays or something. So
right,
if something happens from the outside, they don't have a tremendous amount of insight.
Right.
So it's hard to make change.
Right.
They don't have... Here's a great example of what it is with a narcissist. For example, the narcissist will always be late because they have no regard for anyone else's feelings. So in therapy, we can address the behavior and
correct,
teach them to be on time. So now the narcissist shows up on time, but they still don't listen.
Right.
Because that higher
right,
order bit of
right,
getting them to do the deeper stuff of
right, right,
feeling like others, understanding others, they rarely get there.
Right.
But here's the bottom line. Even in therapy, you might be able to get them engage. You might even get them to be more self-reflective. But when the rubber meets the road and they go back into their boyfriend, girlfriend, marriage, whatever it is, relationships are sloppy places.
Right.
And
right,
you go back to your old habits almost
mm-hmm,
instantly.
Right.
So what we'll see with most narcissists is we might make baby steps. We might be able to change a behavior or two, but we're never going to get the big ticket change that's going to make them into a much healthier partner. I know that's a tough thing to say, but they
yeah,
really don't change.
Yeah, it's
and I
sad,
think a lot of people are waiting for that Santa
right,
Claus moment where their narcissist comes in full of
right,
feeling and empathy and is no longer grandiose. Good luck with that. And if you know
right,
who that therapist is, please give him my number because I'll pass
you,
on some referrals because it ain't happening.
I hear you, girl.
Doesn't exist. Doesn't exist.
No, I know.
Yeah.
And on that note, I encourage a lot of people who are in relationship with narcissists or have, you know, romantic and or family mm-hmm, issues, you know, to understand you and I as psychologists mm-hmm, we have to not judge. We just
mm-hmm,
have to
yeah,
that's part of who
mm-hmm,
we are, and we have to look at it clinically
mm-hmm,
and objectively. So what I tell them is to try to do that as mm-hmm, we do and say, hey, this there is there is a chip missing, and it's okay.
Yes, I think that's well put. There's an empathy chip missing, and there's two entitlement chips in place.
Yes.
So that's the problem. Yeah.
And now, is this is another problem that I see, and a lot of people say, well, can I get them to take antidepressants? Can't we find the mechanism of the chemical imbalance? And don't we get to help them?
You know, without getting too sort of sciencey, clinically therapy-ish, narcissism is an attachment disorder. They did not learn how to connect in a healthy way very early in life. You don't, there's no reset button on life, and you don't get to go back to when they were little and reset those attachments. And so there is something inherently not working, but the problem is the traits of narcissism, the selfishness, the entitlement, they're so reinforced by the world that they're often the most successful person in the room. They've got the biggest house. They've got the nicest car. They take the best vacation. So to everybody's eyes, they look really successful. Mm-hmm. It's only when you drill down that you really realize that that big, fancy facade is in front of an empty shell.
Ugh, and that's the really tough thing about it. I mean, and it's that's why it's very hard, again, to identify, because, like, I'm sure you get in your practice, why didn't I see those red flags? Why didn't I just thought they were so fun and charming and successful and everyone admired them, and now I'm starting to feel really bad and kind of like bad about myself. And are narcissists bullies?
They're bullies. I mean, I think that it goes one in the same, you know, almost without exception. Okay. Because if they don't get their way in a normal way, they're going to get their way somehow. So invariably, they're going to become a bully.
Yes.
Listen, every one of us has an inner bully, I hate to say it, and it can come out if we're frustrated, if maybe we're trying to fight for health care for a family member, or, you know, often when we're trying to advocate for someone and we've been pushed to a limit. Narcissists are bullies on a daily basis.
Yeah. Wow.
And so it's an apropos way to characterize them. They tend to be yellers, too.
Yeah.
Anyone in a relationship with a narcissist will tell you that their rage, it comes up fast, and it's frightening.
Mm. My goodness, it sure is. Mm-hmm. And you can see that.
Yeah.
And is that based on defensiveness because they have been tormented or abused, possibly verbally, you know, emotionally, or actually physically, sexually abused? In the early environment, they are so defensive about saving their ego that that's what they're fighting for? Is that what it is?
I do think the defensiveness is primitive. It is that they're trying to save their ego. But again, if you are fully formed, you're confident in your sense of self.
Yes.
So you don't have to defend yourself.
Right.
If you do something wrong, you do what most of us who are, you know, well put together do.
Okay.
You say, I'm sorry.
Sure.
I'm really sorry. And you learn from it. Ideally, you don't
so
do it
sorry.
Again. The narcissist says, I'm sorry. And then they go do it again in the next hour because they're not really sorry.
Because they really kind of
want
to get what they want to get from you
at
that time.
At any cost.
Right. Yes. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So what I've seen sometimes is that someone will say, well, my brother is a narcissist, and I'll ask about family history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't have a lot of emotional upset, really. We didn't have abuse. We didn't have situations. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my grandpa, as I think about it, he had, like, six wives. He he was a narcissist. So is it an inherited disorder, per se?
There's not much of it. I don't know that it's heritable. I think the issue with narcissism is it's created by almost, when I say an impoverished early life, by impoverished, I don't mean not enough money. I mean not enough feeling and not enough presence. When you have parents that are chronically distracted, when you have parents that put high demands on their kids in very specific ways, in other words, they're the kids' cheerleader when they're on the ball field or when they get straight A's, but then the parents are disengaged when the kid's not doing something else. For example, when the kid talks about their feelings.
Right.
And so these kids grow up in these worlds where they're, in essence, sometimes performing monkeys, or their parents are completely distracted from them, and so those kids never learn a normal emotional vocabulary. That poor kid learns to run around in circles to get their parents' attention, but it's a very empty emotional world, guess what they're doing as adults?
Sure.
Running around to get people's attention.
Sure.
Now it's bikini pictures on Instagram. Back then, they would try to do whatever else they could, but they never got fed, in essence, when they were young, so they go into adulthood starving.
Wow. Does that make a lot of sense?
So in that way, they're kind of, I mean, pathetic is a strong word, but it's sad.
It is very sad.
Don't think of narcissists as confident, because they're not.
Right.
They come off as confident.
Right.
They're
actually
pretty empty, and they're not psychologically fully formed.
Okay.
But here's the rub.
Yeah.
You're not their therapist. You're their boyfriend or their girlfriend or their husband or their wife. Your job's not to be their therapist. And nobody deserves to be in a relationship where they're treated badly.
Right, exactly.
So don't feel like it's your crusade to go out there and redeem this person.
Right.
That's not what this is about. No
right.
other human beings don't rescue each other. They love for each other. They respect each other. But this isn't about rescuing. So my job, your job as psychologists, may be to meet that narcissist at a compassionate place. But I don't want to watch people throw themselves under the bus and ruin themselves in the name of a fantasy and an illusion in a relationship with a narcissist.
Beautifully said. And that's the thing. You and I see so many so-called caregivers who really want to fix someone. Like, well, I can fix him.
I can fix them.
And I say him because aren't narcissists more classically attributed to men?
Yeah.
Because women have more of the axis to, as we call, cluster B personality
disorders.
Well,
narcissism
disorders.
Is a cluster B
personality
disorder.
Of the borderline, women tend to be more of the borderline because of their possible
emotional. I think things are shifting.
Wow.
I mean, listen, there are you got listeners out there who are men. Derek might be dealing with this. I mean, you've got listeners out there who are listening, who are listening and who are men and have been in these relationships. I have worked with many men in relationships with women who are very narcissistic. And these men will say it's emasculating.
Yes.
Nothing was ever enough. You got him a ring, they wanted a bigger ring. You gave him a purse, they wanted two. You could never give them enough regard. They wouldn't want to help with the kids. They wanted the house to be a certain way. These men said, I could have worked 24/7 and it was never going to be enough.
Well, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
That
it goes both ways.
It's just so much. And it is. It's like sucking all the air out of the room. That person, heads up, guys, that person makes you feel like they're always sucking the air out of a room. And I've heard before, too, from people, you know, that they do. They feel that, like, you know, other people get ready for them, you know, which is really tough. So, so that reminds me, that's perfect lead on into someone else who has written us. This is from... looks like Jennifer, and she says, hey doc, this is a great show, thanks so much, this is giving me more information about narcissism. Whenever I go out with my boyfriend, we have a great group, but he always monopolizes the conversation and we'll talk nonstop for half an hour. I always try to tell him that my friends don't like it, but he won't listen. Is he a narcissist?
Well, I mean, Jennifer, just like, you know, what you said with Derek, you know, haven't met him, so can't really, you know, diagnose him in any way. But, you know, that pattern of someone monopolizing a conversation, before we go dark and think it's narcissism, I would say to Jennifer, it could also be deep insecurity.
Okay.
That when somebody does feel the need to monopolize a conversation, they could actually be, in their own way, sort of socially anxious.
Yes.
Feel like they have to keep up with the Joneses or keep up with the friends.
Right.
And so it can be the kind of thing where the friends together can gently try to steer the conversation away. Before we go dark and say, could this be a part of a narcissistic picture? Absolutely. It's almost like he's saying, your stories aren't interesting, only mine is. But it's also hard for Jennifer because she doesn't want his feelings to get hurt, but she's also sort of feeling like, oh, this is, you know, this isn't cool. And so I think that before you jump the gun, it could be that more vulnerable place that you and the friends do try to steer the conversation, and that maybe sometimes it's harder for these things to come from a girlfriend than a friend, to be honest with you. And see if one of the friends in the group is able to say, dude, you know what? Like, let someone else pipe in. We'd love to hear how everyone else's week was, and kind of keep it in bro talk instead of like emotional relationship talk. Because sometimes men will sometimes respond to their friends more.
Yeah.
And so it has to be a little strategic as well. But I think that's a great question, Jennifer. It could be a soft sign, but if he's not being rude, like if he's monopolizing but he's not being a bully or rude in the conversation, it may be more that he is more socially anxious and wants to just be heard and doesn't want to, I don't know, he's nervous.
Yes.
We often talk too much when we're nervous.
That's true. Yeah. We do. Yeah. So maybe it is. It's a little lower self-esteem thing going on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to look out for that.
Yeah.
And also, I was just going to mention the caregiver syndrome, too, with a lot of narcissists. I would suggest that a lot of folks, you know, who continue to be in ongoing relationships with narcissists, kind of maybe get some help, maybe get some therapy about why they need to caregive or fix that person and why they keep holding out, you know, that this person is going to change. Why, you know, just kind of take a look at yourself, and maybe some of the listeners who've written me here can kind of look at themselves if they think they are in a narcissistic relationship and why they hang in there with it. And again, you and my being here and talking about this in your book, which is amazing, Should I Stay or Should I Go, is not about putting someone down or, you know, we're not hating on the, on the narcissistic personality disorder. You are clinically explaining what it is, how to deal with it, why it's sort of gone rampant in this society, and it's almost a positive thing seemingly, but how it can be really damaging to us if we stay in these relationships, and also what to expect. Again, if you'd like to find out more about how to get the book, Dr. Ramani Durvasula, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Surviving a Relationship with a Narcissist, what would be the best way for folks to find you and get the book?
Well, I mean, first of all, if you want to get the book, Amazon's a great way to get it. Just go on Amazon.com, type in Dr. Ramani and Should I Stay or Should I Go? This is my second book, so you look for that. It's one of... it'll come up there. BarnesandNoble.com too. And if you're a bookseller, if you have a local bookstore you like to go to, have them order it. So we should always support our local booksellers too. And you can find me on my website at Dr. Ramani. It's DocTorRamani.com. And, you know, you'll find some bits and pieces, you know, link to order the book. And I'm around and about.
Great. Yes, you are, my dear. And also, you have a wonderful, successful practice in Santa Monica area. Beautiful area. I love that. And, of course, you're a professor of psychology at Cal State University, Los Angeles, which is amazing. And so you know what you're talking about here. And guys, pick up the book. It's a great read. It's comfortable. It's really... you know, kind of layperson friendly.
Yes, it is.
In
that
a way,
was my intention.
Help you really understand what's going on here. So let's just say a lot of folks have read your book here, and they're saying, gee, I'm tired of feeling yucky being in this relationship. I'm tired of dealing with this. I kind of want to break up with this person. What should people expect from a narcissist if they need to break up with them?
I'm going to tell you right out, I'm not going to sugarcoat this, it ain't going to be pretty.
Okay.
Because narcissists are all about ego, and you packing up and leaving is going to hurt their ego. I don't even think they're as sad about losing you as they are about feeling like they were sucker punched. Like, it's more like an intellectual thing. How dare you game me? And so you can expect some contention. I often tell people, this isn't going to be your ordinary breakup. You're going to need to prepare. Like, you need to make sure if it's... again, I want to take a side note.
Okay.
It is very common. And I would say, in fact, I'd say just about every domestic violence situation I've ever seen, the abuser was narcissistic.
Okay.
Okay, let's keep that in mind.
Okay.
So please keep in mind that the guidance I'm giving, it's not for a domestic violence situation. Those situations, very clear.
Okay.
You have to get the person safe.
Okay.
You may need to involve law enforcement. So that's a whole different conversation. But in your garden variety narcissistic relationship, expect yelling, screaming, and the more hurtful things than you could ever imagine hearing in a single conversation. I really recommend people to be in therapy when they're going through this process. Because it just helps to have a professional sounding board. Have a friend there if you need. Make sure you're on the ready to get out of there, because it may be the kind of thing where they're acting so cruelly and irrationally that you can't have a logical conversation, and they ain't going to let go.
Yep.
They're going to keep calling, texting, because for them now it's a game. They're going to try to win you back.
Right.
Don't get sucked back in. And you know what? Watch your social media. Don't view it as your woe is me playground. And finally, block, block, block. The beautiful thing of this technology, the one good thing, is you can block people.
That's right.
Block them. Don't wait for those texts of them trying to win you back, and just block them. And don't even go there.
Right.
Those are some major ways to manage the situation.
That's wonderful advice, because, I mean, and I know you do, too. We see people who get literally addicted to this drama.
Yes,
it's just
do.
A circle of push and pull and push and pull, and they hope so hard that this person is going to change, and then boom. But it's almost like an addiction.
It's an addiction. You know what it is? By coming and going and leaving and coming and back, you get to recreate those first idyllic weeks of the relationship, because the narcissist seductive game is the best game in town.
Yeah.
So if you can get them in the position where they're trying to win you back, you can go to the fantasy that it's still good, and then you're going to be right back to not being heard within a week.
I'm just, oh my gosh, it's true. Yeah, it I think is. A lot it of is. Listeners yeah. are going, uh-oh, mm-hmm. here we go. Just kind of briefly, I really enjoyed your part of the book where you talked about the life lessons mm-hmm. that some of the folks who had to deal with narcissists in their life learned. Can you share maybe yeah. some of those life lessons?
I interviewed people from all over the country, mm-hmm. all ages, all genders, you know, married. There, some were married, some weren't, some mm-hmm. for 25 years, some short. So it was a lot of stories I heard. And one thing that came out is every single one, almost without exception, said, I wish I hadn't stayed so long. Mm. Because now that I'm out, the relief I feel, it's the best feeling in the world. And some of these people lost everything in leaving. So it's not like they went on to comfortable lives. And they said, even as I go into this tiny studio apartment from a huge house, the relief I feel every day is enormous. They all felt they stayed too long. Yes. The other thing they wish they hadn't done was get so isolated.
Right.
They said that narcissists often isolate their partners. Right. Why? Because everyone else is going to notice your partner's a narcissist and say, what are you doing?
Right.
So what do? You end up always spending time with the narcissist friends, the narcissist family, or they just isolate you from everyone. And everyone I interviewed said, I wish I hadn't lost. I hurt a lot of people.
Right.
I isolated myself and I lost the supports I needed. When it came time to go, it was my friends that helped give me the courage to get out.
Oh, it's true. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, we hear it from a lot of friends and family saying, you know, like we said earlier in the show, go the other way, get the heck out. But, you know, we just have these rose-colored glasses because it just, again, we get lured into the charm and the, you know, if they are successful. Mm-hmm. And both men and women. I mean, it's not just men that I'm talking about who are narcissists.
Not at all.
There's a lot of women, you know, narcissists as well who have these character traits. And it's just, it's almost suffocating. And we really need to kind of get space from the environment and that person and get some help to understand what we're dealing with, as you suggest.
These relationships also take a huge toll on a person in terms of the victim, if you will. They their confidence drops. They doubt themselves. So you don't even feel like if you leave, you'll be able to take care of yourself.
Right.
So that's what keeps a lot of people in the game, too. Or they feel like the devil I know is better than the angel I don't.
Well, that's
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That fear of, you know, being alone, that fear of isolation. And again, there is a lot of rush. There's a charm. There's an excitement.
Absolutely.
There's you know, the grandiosity is so exciting. Sometimes these people go, well, like you said, the better, I know the devil who I'm dealing with. But those,
the charming
those
devil.
Good times are so good and so fun.
That's
those
right.
highs are so high.
High. Yeah.
But the lows that I'm starting to feel, and I want you guys to really start noticing how you feel. And there's a lot, there's a huge part dedicated to this book, by the way, Should I Stay or Should I Go, about defining really how you feel and determining if you want to feel this way any longer. And some of the reasons also why you chose and kind of fell for a person like this and got yourself into a relationship. But it explains so much information.
Thank you.
It's wonderful. And maybe once again, if you could tell the listeners the best way to get a hold of your book. Of course, all of the brick and mortar stores, any kind of bookstore,
any
it's
bookstore.
Out there.
Yeah, and if they don't have it, they'll order it. They'll get it in a couple of days. And obviously, good old Amazon. It's also available on Audible as an audiobook. It's a good workout book. You'll be angry at the end of the workout. And then you can also obviously get it for your Kindle or your, you know, or any kind of an e-reader, too.
All right. And the book, again, is called Should I Stay or Should I Go? Surviving a Relationship with a Narcissist. A wonderful read. Dr. Ramani Dervasula, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's
thank
just been
you,
such
Dr.
a pleasure
Michelle.
To have you.
Great to talk with you and with your listeners.
Oh, thank you so much. So, guys, if you want to check it out, the show will be up and in the archives when we get off the air. If you missed a little bit and said, gee, I wanted to hear more, of course, it'll have all the information on how you can get a hold of the doctor's book and also check out the show again. All my shows, again, are free on iTunes Podcast, so be sure and check that out as well. Guys, thank you so much for being on the couch today with me. As always, it's been a pleasure to have you. Thank you for your emails. I'm sorry I didn't get to all of you, but you can continue to follow up here on straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. All right, next week we're going to talk about an amazing new film, much like The Secret. It's called I Think. Inspirational help for positive thinking, mindfulness, and basically changing your life. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen. Have a great week. Bye-bye now.
flashing red.